Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's episode of The Halftime Show, the Wednesday weekly show where we talk about all the biggest news and notes around the sports universe. We are brought to you each and every week by BetUS. BetUS is your place for all of your betting needs. Check out their sports book today and see it all. I'm your host, Cody Steger. With me as always is Eric Name. Eric, what's happening?
Not too much. Just sitting down here in St. Louis, depressed. That's about it.
Are you okay?
I mean, it's all right. It's going to be bad for the next week, so I'm going to have to keep dealing with these just Cardinals fans, and it's not going to be fun.
Well, they'll probably get swept anyways, so don't worry about it too much. But yeah, I've been depressed for the past, like, how many days as it is. I don't even want to go outside anymore. I don't want to go to school. Just don't want to eat. And also with us today, our special guest, the man who was seen sleeping with Jim Harbaugh Sunday night, it's our good friend Steve Mani. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks. I actually haven't done any of those things that you said you didn't want to do. So it's been pretty brutal. I've been sitting in a pitch dark room the last 3 days. I'm just real sad.
Have you showered at all? Or?
Not at all. I haven't even thought about it.
Oh, man. That's definitely not good. So what's on our plate tonight? It's World Series time. Disappointingly, no Brewers. Game one is tonight between the Cardinals and the Rangers. It's at 7 o'clock. I won't be watching it. We're going to briefly preview the series. We also have some college football to talk about, both Big Ten and national, with the BCS rankings finally coming out. Along with that, we're going to recap what we saw from week 6 of the football season, along with some discussion about the 49ers, Oakland Raiders, and a couple other teams. And, of course, at the end of the show, we're going to give our picks for Week 7. And also, if you want to call in, chat with us, ask us questions, call in, call 347-327-9748. Once again, 347-327-9748. All right, let's talk about college football here so we don't have to talk about the Brewers anymore. BCS came out Sunday. LSU won, Alabama, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Boise State, Wisconsin at 6. Your thoughts right away looking at these rankings?
My mind's boggled as a Wisconsin fan. I know we don't have the strongest non-conference schedule, but how those teams hopped over us, Oklahoma State really gets me. I don't get that one. And Boise State as well. How those two teams managed to hop over the top of Wisconsin in the BCS rankings really just gets to me. I don't get it.
I agree. I think Wisconsin should be fourth, but if they beat Michigan State, they'll be fourth. So I'm not too worried about it. It's only halfway through the season or so right now.
I got to disagree with you, Eric, on Oklahoma State. I think they're one of the best 3-4 teams out there right now. You know, they beat Texas A&M by one at Texas A&M. They crushed Kansas. They beat Texas pretty well. You know, and they don't have – I mean, they have Kansas State later in a couple weeks at home. Besides that, they only have to play Oklahoma at home late December. I think this team is really good. They have a fantastic offense, and I love their coach.
The thing that really gets me about that is, okay, you can say, all right, Texas A&M number 8 when they beat them at A&M. Texas was number 22 when they beat them at Texas. Those are two impressive road wins. I'm not going to take that away from them. But year in and year out, there is not a more overrated conference in the nation than the Big 12. To me, it's really not even close. I mean, year in and year out, I think the SEC and Big 10 are the two best. This year, it's probably not true with Ohio State having a down year. But the Big 12, I just think, is constantly overrated because no one in that conference plays any semblance of defense, and they all just score 50 points a game. So really, I don't think there's actual football being played in that conference. It's just teams having a shootout at the OK Corral. Like, that's just all it is.
Well, don't you think that might just be because, you know, you live in Big Ten country and you see defense played all the time? I mean, you look at SEC and you see some defense. Pac-12, there's no defense. ACC, it varies week to week. I understand what you're saying with the Big 12 and really no defense, but I think it's more that their offenses are so dynamic. I mean, you even look at a team like Texas Tech with the air raid offense, and they're even a successful program.
I mean, I'm not trying to disagree with you and say that the Big 12 impresses or the Big 12 offenses aren't impressive. I'm just saying that there's absolutely no defense played in that conference, and being forced to watch every Missouri game every single week, and I've watched them all thus far, you just don't see any defense being played. Like, no semblance of defense. They don't even care about defense. They just care about how many points they put on the board. That's the thing that gets to me, is that the great teams, some of those teams in the SEC, their offenses are great, but all of a sudden you get them into bowl play against a Big 12 team, and all of a sudden you're like, wow, Alabama's defense is stacked. LSU's defense is stacked. Wisconsin's defense is stacked. And I just have never said that for a single Big 12 defense in my life, ever.
Okay.
To be fair, Oklahoma State is the best in the country in the computer rankings. And also with Oklahoma being in their conference, it's just going to make them look better, because Wisconsin's the best team in the Big Ten, and Oklahoma State's the second best team, but Oklahoma's super good too. So I think that also helps their ranking.
Okay, so who do you guys actually would, if you could put your money down on a team to win it all, and who you think is the best team, who would you say? Because I mean, I really think this Wisconsin team's really good. I already said about Oklahoma State, and I really don't trust this LSU team. So if I would have had to put money on one, it'd probably be Oklahoma. I mean, Landry Jones is a great quarterback. Bob Stoops, great coach. They have a consistent running game, and they have, you know, Broyles at receiver, and he's already got 9 touchdowns and 60 catches.
I think Wisconsin beats Boise State, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma. And then I think it's really between LSU, Alabama, and Wisconsin. And between LSU and Alabama, I think if you played 10 games between the two, each team would win 5. And Wisconsin against those two teams, each one of them would probably win 6, and Wisconsin would win 4. So I think it's between LSU and Alabama, and I really think it's a pick 'em between those two.
What do you think, Steve?
I think it's Alabama. Their defense is incredible. They give up 7 points a game. They have played 3 ranked opponents too, but after this week they actually play home against LSU, so that'll probably be a 1-2, and that'll be a pretty good matchup.
Eric, what is it about Wisconsin that you just like this much with this team?
Since I've watched Wisconsin football, I've always tried to imagine what that team could be like if they had a good quarterback. And this year has finally answered my question. And that means the offense is unstoppable. Because back in the day, we have Allen Everidge at quarterback, Brooks Bollinger, who's all right. But, I mean, we've had some really sad quarterbacks come through the system. And all you have is you just run the ball, and once that team stops at the Badgers, they're pretty much screwed. And it's going to be a low-scoring game. Now with Russell Wilson, if someone stops the Badgers on the first 2 downs on 3rd and 6, I think you have confidence in Russell Wilson to get that out of the shotgun. And that offense is just so much more versatile that now if the defense might not be as good as it has been in the past, the offense can make up for that. And I just really think they're very dynamic on offense.
All right. Yeah, I got to agree. I mean, I hate Wisconsin football. I mean, I've never been a huge fan, even though we're from Wisconsin. But, I mean, even as a Minnesota fan, you got to respect this Wisconsin football program, because as you and Steve all talked about it preseason with Russell Wilson and if he was going to gel with this offense, and I was really skeptical. I mean, you were too. I think we all were. And he's proved us all wrong. He's really a Heisman candidate, and he really is this leader of this team. And you have running backs like Monty Ball and James White just running around like a beast. And there's really no stopping, especially with this offensive line being so stacked as it is, and their defense just being terrific. Anyone?
I would have to agree. Wisconsin has looked, I mean, honestly, better than I thought they'd even look at this point. I thought there was going to be some blowouts, but I thought there'd be a learning curve for Russell Wilson, and there hasn't been. From day one, he came in, and he's looked very, very good. Like I said, it'll be interesting to see what happens once Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and LSU and Alabama go through a whole SEC and Big 12 schedule, because there are better teams in those two conferences this year, and it looks really like Wisconsin should have a relatively clean run through the Big Ten, and then in the Big Ten championship play, maybe possibly an undefeated Michigan at that point, if Michigan gets through the whole season.
Michigan lost last week, buddy.
Oh, yeah, sorry. That was my fault. But either way, you still think Michigan might probably end up being the team they end up playing, and at least they'll be a ranked team at that point. So, really, I think Wisconsin's just beyond the eight ball. They have to wait for some of these other teams to lose, because otherwise they won't get up there in the BCS rankings.
Hey, Eric, do you think the spread's too low for Wisconsin, Michigan State? Wisconsin's only favored by 7.
I think it is. I think D'Antoni is a really overrated coach. But I understand Wisconsin went on the road. It's going to be a little bit tougher to win there in East Lansing. So I can see why that would be the way it is, but I think this Wisconsin offense is just way more dynamic than it was last season.
Well, the spread was originally 8.5, and I mean, College Game Day at East Lansing, and the Spartans at home during a night game the past, 3, 4, 5 years, I'm almost positive they're undefeated or they've only lost once, and that's pretty good. I mean, even I know – I think it's going to be very interesting to watch this defensive line of Michigan State against the Wisconsin offensive line, because Michigan State has two amazing NFL-ready prospects in Golston and in Jarrell Worthy. And, you know, Wisconsin, they're always known for their offensive line. And if they can stop these guys, they have a great shot in making a blowout. But I think a spread of 7 is pretty perfect. So I really have no complaints.
I think Wisconsin's offensive line is pretty much going to dominate just because they're really big. Their offensive line, I think each guy is average, taller, and bigger than the Green Bay Packers' offensive line. And also, their defense doesn't get any credit. They don't give up 10 points a game. Like, they've given up 17 points twice, but they show out Oregon State. They crush everyone. And their defense is – like, points-wise, is better than Michigan State's is so far this year. So I think the line's way too low. I think it should be more like 10 or 11.
Okay. Do you want to talk about anything here, Eric?
Nope, I think I covered it pretty well. I think the line's way too low.
All right, well, all right. I guess I might be crazy. I don't know. It might be because I've always been a Michigan State fan with basketball, and I write for Michigan State. I mean, I have a Michigan State roommate, but I do like this Michigan State team. I mean, if you just look at the other Big Ten teams besides Wisconsin, I really think Michigan State's the second-best team. You have a seasoned veteran in Kirk Cousins at quarterback, and he's struggled all season so far. I mean, you got to think that he's become better sooner rather than later. And then you have a two-pronged running attack and Edwin Baker and Le'Veon Bell. I mean, I know they're not ball and white, but they're pretty darn close. And I think both their receiving core is better than Wisconsin's, and I really think that it's not even close, because B.J. Cunningham, Keyshawn Martin, and others is just – they're pretty stacked when you actually look at – like. But the thing is it's points allowed, points against. They're fourth in the NCAA with 10.8 points a game against them. I know you said Wisconsin. I think they're one or two, whatever. But, I mean, you've played against Michigan. You have Denard Robinson, and you only give them up 14. You only give up 7 against Ohio State. And, I mean, you get crushed again at Notre Dame. But besides that, there's really not a blemish on this Michigan State team.
What would you say is the difference between a Notre Dame offense and a Michigan offense?
A Michigan offense?
I would say one is a pro-style offense and one's a spread offense. And the Badgers run a pro-style offense. So if you got crushed by a Notre Dame pro-style offense, what's going to happen to you when you go up against a bigger and better version of a pro-style offense? That's just the way I see it. I mean, I've always been a Denard Robinson hater. I don't think he's very good.
Oh, he's awful. He can't throw.
The spread is a gimmick that will never work in the Big Ten, and I just think it's a joke. So being able to say you stopped Denard Robinson, I'm not impressed with. If you got beat by a pro-style offense, just wait till you see the pro-style offense that comes into East Lansing this week.
Okay. All right. Let's switch gears to the World Series. I know we really don't want to talk about it, but I think we have to. It's game one tonight, as we said, Texas in St. Louis, T.J. Wilson against Chris Carpenter. Let's just go position by position quick. Who do you like better, the starting, just the whole pitching staff of St. Louis or of Texas? Eric, you can go first.
We've talked week in and week out about how we don't really like that Rangers starting rotation, but then again, I don't really like the Cardinals starting rotation. With both these teams, with as much as they use their bullpens, I think it's really going to come down to managerial protection. If each one of these managers can protect the starting pitchers when things start to go bad, which they have for both teams thus far in the playoffs, if their managers can get them out of these situations. I mean, in that Brewers series, you look at Cardinals pitchers, none of them, the longest they go is Carpenter with five innings, and the rest never got to the fifth inning. So, I mean, that's really saying something about those two starting pitching rotations. While the Rangers were a little bit more successful on the season, I think it's really just a horse apiece. I like Carpenter more than I like Wilson, and then from then on, it's probably about a horse apiece.
Yeah. Steve?
I like Texas' rotation a little better, but the only problem is three of them are lefties, and St. Louis hits left-handed pitching really well. Or they have. They didn't hit Randy Wilfall at all, but they hit them well. But C.J. Wilson has had a pretty bad postseason so far. He hasn't done well at all any game that he's played. So I do think it's close, but barely Texas.
Okay. See, I'd also have to go with Texas. With C.J. Wilson, though, I think it's got a lot to do that, you know, he's a free agent, and he still has to prove that he deserves to be a Type A free agent, which he'll be. So I think he might just be over-pitching himself. I just don't trust this Cardinals pitching staff in general. Chris Carpenter, he's been shaky all year. Edwin Jackson is purely shaky every start. And then you look at Jaime Garcia and their other pitchers. It's just I don't trust them. And with me, the thing that I really don't trust is their bullpen because they're so young and they just gelled together just lately. I mean, you can get – all of a sudden you have one bad game. I think the whole wagon just turns loose and just falls over. And this Texas bullpen is just – to me, it's just very veteran-like because you have guys like Mike Adams, former Brewer. You have Neftali Feliz. You have Ogando. You have Scott Feldman even pitching the bullpen. I just think that they're – just heads and above a lot better in terms of relievers. And then with their starters, which like Eric just said, we don't like their starters that much, but I definitely take their starters.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a series of two teams that got really, really hot. I mean, the Rangers were much more impressive than the Cardinals were during most of the regular season, but the month of September for both these teams and then this postseason, these teams are on fire. I mean, Nelson Cruz is mashing out of his mind, just ridiculous stuff. And the same thing for his Cardinals lineup. David Freese last year's hitting .545. Are you kidding me? That is just out of this world. No one could have seen that coming, and who knows what happens in this next series, because maybe some of these guys get cold after they go out, after they've sat out for a while. I mean, Cruz had a little bit longer break than the Cardinals, but who knows if these couple days off will affect these guys or if they're keep hitting, because if they keep hitting, this is going to be a high-scoring affair.
Another thing about the bullpens, though, the St. Louis Cardinals bullpen, they throw a lot of fastballs. A lot of guys can throw in, like, the mid-90s, and Texas was the best fastball-hitting team in baseball. So even comparative to the bullpens, I think Texas has a better bullpen. And then the lineups versus the bullpens, I think Texas crushes it.
Yeah, let's just talk about these lineups. I mean, you look at the Rangers lineup. Let's say they're at St. Louis. I'm not sure what the lineup is yet, but let's say you put
Kinsler,
Michael.
It's Kinsler, Andrews, Hamilton, Young, Beltre, Cruz, Napoli, Murphy, Wilson.
So really your weak spot technically is David Murphy, who hit pretty well in the ALDS. It's just a ridiculous lineup, and I don't think that St. Louis didn't compare. I mean, you look at Yadier Molina batting fifth or sixth or seventh, and there's a lot of games where I wouldn't trust him. I mean, David Freese, there's no way that he can continue this tear. Berkman against lefties, he can't hit lefties. And then even though Matt Holliday is hitting well along with Albert Pujols, they've been very streaky all season. So I could not trust the St. Louis team altogether. And then as with this Texas team, Nelson Cruz now batting sixth, Napoli seventh. You know, even though you have Michael Young batting four and he's not playing that well, just altogether, it's hard to get three straight outs.
Yeah, I mean, that's the definition of an AL lineup right there. I can't even imagine the pitcher and seeing one of those guys. Typically, you're happy when you get to see 7, 8, 9. And that's not even the case with this team. I don't want to lead off an inning against Mike Napoli. That's awful. That sucks. But, I mean, even though that lineup is stacked, for a while during that Brewers series, that Cardinals lineup looked just as stacked. I mean, for Call, Jay, Pujols, Holliday, Berkman, Freeze, all hit well, and Molina's always good for a clutch hit or at least moving a runner over. I think Punto might be the weakest point in that lineup. And, I mean, even that Cardinals lineup, even though it is an NL team, now that all these guys are healthy, that's been the problem in St. Louis this entire year is none of them got healthy at the same time. When Bergman was hurt, Holliday was healthy. When Holliday was hurt, Pujols was healthy. They couldn't get all of them together at the same time, and now they finally put it all together, and they just mash the ball when they get hot.
If St. Louis's lineup and bullpen plays as well as it did in the NLCS, St. Louis will win the series for sure, obviously. David Freese was absolutely ridiculously good. It was every time he was up, you just knew he was going to get a hit, and it wasn't a hit, it was an extra base hit and RBIs every single time. But that's how Beltre pretty much played in the NLDS. He hit 3 home runs in Game 4. And then Nelson Cruz, I think he hit 5 home runs in the series, which is just ridiculous. But so I think it's just going to depend on really, obviously, who's the hotter lineup. But I think the hotter people in the bottom of the order. So like Napoli, Molina, and then Cruz and Freeze.
Okay, so take your pick, guys. What do you got here?
Cardinals in 6.
Okay.
Texas's bullpen is going to be better than St. Louis's. Texas can hit the fastball better. I like Texas in 5.
It's the same with me, Texas in 5. I don't know how this Cardinals team can continue their tear, but I would not be surprised if the Cardinals win in 5 or 6 either. But it's also a series that could go to 6 or 7. There's just a whole bunch of things. And another question, are you going to be watching the game tonight? Because I'm not going to watch it. I'm going to do homework instead. I think that's more something, at least a little bit more valuable than watching the Cardinals and C.J. Wilson.
I don't think I can bring myself to do it because I can't sit there and not see the Brewers in that same position. I don't know. Like, I will just – no, I can't. I can't.
I will watch it starting at 8. But from 7 to 8, I will watch Survivor, only on CBS.
You and your Survivor. You're going to watch it with Boston Robber. Is that who you're watching it with now?
It's a new season now.
I know, but doesn't Boston Rob come over with you and you guys eat popcorn together?
Oh, yes, me and Boston Rob. And then I had to console him for a while after the Red Sox, you know, had one of the biggest collapses in baseball history.
Oh, which is totally understandable. All right, well, we're going to talk NFL after the break, but we need to head to commercial. This is the Halftime Show on Sports Geeks Radio.
Hey there, Milwaukee sports geeks and sports geeks of all kinds. This is Cody from Sports Geeks. Are you looking to get the best seats in the house? Are you looking to sit in the front row where us geeks sit? We geeks only get the best seats, and when it comes to our game day tickets, we go to the authority, the ticket authority. Football, baseball, basketball, college, and pro. They have the authority on finding you the right seats for the right game. Reach out to our guy Brian, tell him you heard from the geeks, and he'll set you up right. So pick up the phone and call him at 414-324-8827. Again, your authority for all of your ticket needs is the Ticket Authority. Remember to tell Brian, the geek sent you. This is the Sports Geeks. Have you been sitting around doing nothing on your big old butt? Well, then join the folks with me at Snap Fitness. We're going to do a 21-day workout. That is right, a 21-day free workout, 3 days a week minimum, with a certified instructor to help us get our big butts back into shape. All you need to do is sign up with Snap Fitness and Hales Corners and join the geeks for the next 21 days, and we will see what we will come up with together. If you guys want to know of a good, healthy snack that doesn't cost too much, how about a bag of beef jerky from Robert's Specialty Meats? The teriyaki is absolutely to die for. I love it. It keeps me going until I can get to the grill, fryer up, and throw on those world-famous ribs on a stick, and bam, 5 minutes per side, and you get Milwaukee's best appetizer. But why stop at the appetizer? No tailgate is complete without some smoked beef brisket. And there's also cheesesteak sandwiches and everything else that you want for meat. Robert's Specialty Meats is absolutely amazing. Best butcher in Milwaukee, and I recommend you to make them yours. You can find them out in Waukesha at 135 East Sunset Drive or call Paul at 262-549-MEAT. That's 262-549-6328.
All right. We are back. You can follow us on Twitter at @halftime_show. You can also follow me on Twitter at @go4swagger. Eric, what is your Twitter?
@Eric_name, NEHM.
And Mr. Mani, what's yours?
@CashMani, MAHNE.
We all know everyone's going to follow Mani after this episode. But let's go right away to the NFL. Steve, you can lead this off. We're going to talk about the 49ers right away. You want to give the recap of what happened in the game?
I guess I will. They played at Detroit on Sunday, and it actually was a pretty good game to watch. San Francisco did well against Calvin Johnson. They weren't going to let him beat him. And then they actually got another timely drive behind Alex Smith, who's played surprisingly well. And on fourth and goal, they passed to Delaney Walker for a touchdown. But that, of course, wasn't the biggest story of the game. The biggest story was the handshake gate between Jim Harbaugh and Jim Schwartz.
Yeah, I right away, I don't think it's that big of news. I don't know why everyone's blowing that up out of proportion. I think it was just heat of the moment. Lions were 5-0, you know, and they were up 10-0 at the start of the game, and they came back. I mean, 49ers came back and won. You know, Harbaugh, he's just kind of a kid out there, you know, kind of like old Brett Favre, just being a kid. So I think it shouldn't be as big of a deal.
Yeah, I thought it was ridiculous, too, with it's Harbaugh and Jim Schwartz. They're both always jacked up on the sidelines doing ridiculous things. Like, that's just how they coach. The fact that after one of the team, after the Lions' undefeated season went away and the handshake might have been a little hard or they talked to each other a little bit too much, who cares? Like, that happens. Like, I don't care if they almost got in a fight. I'm happy they almost got in a fight. That's what I want out of a coach that just lost a game. Go after it. Get crazy. Like, I don't care.
Jim Harbaugh did say in his post-game press conference it was his bad. He shook his hand too hard, which is just a fantastic backhanded stab at Jim Schwartz. Also, it just proves to me why I think baseball's the best sport. Even when you win, you shake hands with the players on your team, and the team that lost just goes into the dugout, which I think is how it should be. I don't even understand why they should have handshakes. I guess it's pretty much just for the media.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I kind of like it, but I kind of don't. I mean, I like seeing like the quarterback – handshake is kind of neat. You know, you're watching Aaron Rodgers try to tell that Sam Bradford's going to be okay when he knows. There's so many fake ones. Like, most of the coach ones are just real fake. But I do like when, like, college teammates see each other saying, hey, how's it going, blah, blah, blah. But then again, it's only for, like, 10 seconds. What are you really telling them?
Yeah, how would you not want to go up there and just scream obscenities at them? Like, that's all I'd want to do. Like, I don't want to talk to you. You just beat me. Like, this is the most physical sport on earth. Grown men just going at it violently, and now you want me to go shake your hand? F that. Like, I'm not about that at all.
Especially during the game when Jim Harbaugh was mad about a call that the refs made, and then Jim Schwartz was yelling at Harbaugh from the Detroit sidelines. So that whole thing was actually pretty much going on the entire game. And I don't know if Harbaugh was just too excited or if he did mean to do that, but either way, the media obviously just made it way more than it was.
Absolutely. All right, so how good is this 49ers team? I still can't really tell. I mean, Alex Smith, you said he played a good game, but he was 17 for 32. He only had 125 yards. I guess he didn't make too many mistakes. But you rely on a heavy rushing game. And with Frank Gore, you know he's going to be injured and miss 2 to 3 games every season. So, I mean, even though they're in a weak conference, I'm still a little skeptical of them entirely. And you said they stopped Calvin Johnson. Well, Calvin still got 7 for 113. I mean, it's not like they wiped him out altogether.
Well, you're not going to shut down Calvin Johnson. But what I said was that they weren't going to let Calvin Johnson be the guy that beat him. And they didn't. But, no, San Francisco is not making too many mistakes by turning over the ball, which is really good. Plus, they can run the football, which is really, I think, underrated in the NFL. Because there's been a lot of games this year where teams got big leads, like Dallas and New England both had big leads earlier in the year, and they kept passing the ball and ended up losing. Where if they would have just ran the ball and played the clock management game, they probably would have won those games. So I think that Harbaugh is a great game manager as a coach, and Alex Smith just isn't making mistakes. And if he keeps doing that, the Niners are going to have a chance to do something in the playoffs.
Okay. My mind's just boggled that I'm looking at a 5-1 49ers team. I don't even know how to put my thoughts into words. They're really outplaying what any expectations I had. They're really playing well, and I'm impressed. There's really nothing else I can say about it.
And they're 5-1, but if you look after the bye week, they could win their next four easily. Home against Cleveland, at Washington, home against the Giants, and home against Arizona. Right there, they could be 9-1, maybe leading the NFC altogether. It's kind of crazy just to think about that because last year everyone had them as the NFC West winner and then they just crumble and now they come back and they're suddenly good again. You're fifth in rushing, second in opponent rushing, and their special teams is what's keeping them in the game. I mean, Ted Ginn Jr. he's found his niche and that's special teams, and they can punt, they can kick, they can block punts, and they can return kicks.
There actually was one thing interesting. The touchdown drive that the 49ers had after Detroit punted, Ted Ginn returned the ball to what looked like Detroit's 40. And when they came back from commercial break, somehow the ball was on Detroit 35, and there wasn't a penalty. So that was actually kind of interesting. It might have just been a mistake that nobody noticed until the game was over.
That's something that, like, I don't know how they would miss that, though, because, you know, especially like Jim Schwartz, he's going to be saying something like that.
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, it's weird, but on Twitter, it showed up on Twitter, like a lot of San Francisco beat writers were talking about it, and they didn't know what was going on. They said they watched replay, said he looked like he was out at about the 40, but it wasn't the 35 where the ball was placed.
Okay. Let's switch a little bit. Let's go across the bay to Oakland. The Raiders, another team they're 4-2. Eric and I talked about this last week, how we both like this Oakland Raiders team. And sadly, Jason Campbell breaks his collarbone. They bring in Carson Palmer. Let's start right there. Carson Palmer for a first-round pick and probably a second-round pick. Can you say that's a little too high?
I don't know. I really don't think it's that bad. You're looking at a Raiders team that's 4-2, doesn't really expect to be there. They're on an upswing, and quarterbacks are a really valuable commodity in this league. Carson Palmer had some amazing years. Since then, he's kind of faded off a little bit, but, I mean, when he played, he was still a good NFL quarterback. So, I mean, you got the momentum of just this whole season, the momentum the team got from Al Davis passing away, just all of that is really just coming together for a great season. So, I mean, with the picks they've made in the past, I don't think you can be that mad at them for giving up draft picks to get a quarterback that they know is a proven commodity.
I think it's a fine trade, actually, because we all know that the Raiders were going to draft a receiver that could run fast and not catch in the first round anyway. So, but although Carson Palmer actually has pretty much gotten progressively worse each full year that he's played. His quarterback, every full year he's played, his quarterback ranking has dropped each year. but he still is a decent quarterback. But I don't think the trade is that bad. Oakland's got ridiculously good defensive line, and that's going to keep them in a lot of games, just how good they can play. And I think they might actually win the West.
Yeah, they could. I mean, San Diego hasn't played that well at all. But with Oakland, I think they gave up a little too much only because, you know, Jason Campbell is going to be back in like 4 or 5 weeks. So you really just give up another – you're already out a couple picks for next year, and now you get rid of some more picks. And it's just a team that the past couple years have been trading picks for players, and I don't know if that's the best strategy. I mean, like, the Lakers have done that in the past in the NBA, but I look at them, they're kind of old, and it's going to happen the same thing with Oakland. I don't think Carson Palmer is the right answer quarterback. If you can get Kyle Orton for a fifth-round pick, why not get Orton for a fifth-round pick and not trade for Palmer for such a bigger price?
Because Kyle Orton sucks, and Carson Palmer is a lot better, and if you're going to be in the playoffs, you want the best quarterback you can possibly have.
I don't think that Palmer is better than Orton at all. I know that Orton's bad in the red zone, but look what you have. You have Darren McFadden, you have Michael Bush that could just pound it into the end zone as it is. I guess I'm just not a fan of Carson Palmer because every year he just seems to disappoint, and he gives up way too many interceptions.
What are the Madden overalls on each of them? I think that will tell who the better player is.
And maybe you're not a big Carson Palmer fan, but you must be a real Kyle Orton lover, because to say that he is near the same level as him is just out of control.
It's like saying you're comparing like a D-minus quarterback to a D-plus quarterback. I don't think there's really that much difference. It's not like you're going from, you know, Kyle Orton to, let's say, Josh Freeman or someone that can actually manage a game. Carson Palmer hasn't managed a game in years that meant any significance.
But when you look at his situation in Cincinnati, what do they want him to do? They want him to throw it all over the place. Now he's in a situation where they're not going to ask him to do those same things. They're not going to ask him to throw it that many times a game. Like you said already, that they have guys like Michael Bush, Darren McFadden. They can run the ball. They don't need him chucking it all over the place when Cincinnati thought they were Indianapolis light and could chuck it around all over the place with wide receivers that weren't as good and a quarterback that wasn't as good. To say that it's D-minus to D-plus, you've got to be out of your mind. It is D-minus to – he's at least a – B minus. I mean, Carson Palmer can play. Kyle Orton is just an awful excuse for a quarterback.
I guess we'll have to wait and see. Speaking of awful quarterbacks, let's go to the Minnesota Vikings. The Sunday Night Football, what a great showing. I think the final score was, 39-10? No disrespect for the Vikings, but you can't give up 39 to the Chicago Bears. And, you know, at halftime they switched to Christian Ponder, and I don't know if that was the best move because it's not like McNabb was doing any great passes, but he was at least consistent. He was being a clock manager, and then you put in Christian Ponder, and now you're already starting him for next week. What do you guys think about this?
I mean, at some point, you got to see what Christian Ponder had. If you're having a bad year, you might as well see what Christian Ponder has, especially if you're already in the suck-for-luck competition. I mean, you're looking at a team that isn't very good right now in the Minnesota Vikings. You're 1-5. You're right in the suck for luck competition. You got to see what Christian Ponder has. I mean, Jacksonville's doing the same thing. They got Blaine Gabbert over there in the game. They're seeing what Blaine Gabbert has in case they do get the first pick and want to pick Andrew Luck. So I think if you have Christian Ponder, you have to see what he can do.
Do you really think that just playing Christian Ponder the rest of the year is going to give you a good ability to see it if you need Andrew Luck? Because, I mean, Christian Ponder's still going to develop.
Yeah, but
no, I understand that. But, I mean, if you give him the playing time, you can at least see what his actual skills are. You have no idea what a college quarterback's going to look like in the NFL. I mean, you can look at Kevin Cobb. He played awesome at Houston, got to come in a couple of garbage games for the Eagles, and people thought he was good, and the Cardinals give him millions and millions of dollars. So what you want to see is if Christian Ponder can be a game manager for you, because if he can, then you don't need to go after Andrew Luck. You can find something else that's good for you. But if he can't even manage a game, then you just need to get rid of him.
And, well, also with Christian Ponder, when he was drafted, all the experts were saying, you know, even though this is a reach, he is the most NFL-ready quarterback. So with a team with Adrian Peterson and Percy Harvin, I guess maybe he has a chance to win them a couple more games than McNabb does, because you look at that team, when McNabb came out and Ponder came in, there was a little spark in that offense, at least for a little while.
I mean, anything's better than Don McNabb. He's been terrible. Even the last few years as an Eagle, he was bad, and he's just not good. So, I mean, you're looking at two bad things. You might as well, first off, see what Christian Ponder has in case you want to get Andrew Luck, and at least get him some experience. I mean, what's the worst thing that could happen?
That's true.
So now they're pretty much going with Ponder the rest of the year.
I think so. I think they have to go with Ponder the rest of the year. I don't know why they would really go back to McNabb unless Ponder got hurt or he's playing awful. I think it's kind of like, well, I don't even really want to compare it to Jacksonville, because they started with Luke McCown. He's not even a quarterback, really. He's awful. I mean, at least with McNabb, he has the pedigree to at least show that he has can win some games. But it's going to be a long road ahead for the Minnesota Vikings. Don't you agree?
It's ugly over there. Especially with as good as this division is looking in the next few years, they're just going to get beat up on by teams.
Yeah, they're really bad. But about Andrew Luck, I was thinking the other day and talking to an Indianapolis Colts fan, if the Colts end up with the first pick, do they take Andrew Luck?
Yeah, absolutely. It's not even a question. They have to. You know, even if Luck sits 2 to 3 years in Indy, I think they have to take Luck. I know they have holes, you know, in other parts of their offense and defense, but to actually have a legitimate replacement for Peyton Manning is a lot more important than filling up a hole at, like, cornerback or safety.
Right, but Manning comes back.
There's few college quarterbacks. Oh, sorry, Steve. There's few college quarterbacks that are smart enough to even attempt to comprehend 50% of what Peyton Manning does. And, I mean, you look at Luck. He's already at Stanford calling his own plays, calls his own audibles in a pro set. He doesn't do all the same things Peyton Manning does, but he does a lot of the similar things. So, I mean, he's one of the few people that could actually be mentored by Peyton Manning and understand what's going on.
But you don't think if Manning comes back and he plays at the same level that he played at his whole career, he's not going to play for 5 or 6 years?
If that's true, and then 2 years from now, and Peyton's playing as good as he was 2 to 3 years ago, then I guess you trade Andrew Luck. You're not going to – I think the better idea would be just having Luck than having no one right now as your replacement. Having Curtis Painter right now, who's waiting for the Peyton Manning job, it's just – that's not a good idea as just drafting Luck and having a safe option.
And, I mean, just the allure of Andrew Luck, you can sit there and just put him – you have him as your backup. All of a sudden, 3 years, if Peyton has 3 more years in him, you could realistically swap him for 2 high draft picks, either 2 second-rounders, 2 first-rounders. I mean, look at what Carson Palmer just went for. I mean, you don't think the allure of Andrew Luck can get you that much? I think he could.
Hey, look at even just Kevin Cobb. He got him a second, and they're pretty much your number one corner for a quarterback that really hasn't proved anything. Andrew Luck has proved everything in college. Technically, he could stay another year if he really wanted to in college again. If I was any GM 2 years from now and you have no quarterback, I'd trade my top 2 picks for Andrew Luck.
So is there any team that doesn't draft Andrew Luck if they have the first pick? Maybe the Rams don't?
The Rams would be the only pick, but they would just trade Luck right away. Probably first and a future first would be my guess. Do you have any insight on that, Eric, since you're in St. Louis?
I mean, the Bradford's their guy. They have a lot of other problems that they could fix with a first pick, with a top 5 pick. Bradford's untouchable. He's essentially a god here. No one complains about Bradford, only complains about the weapons around him.
All right. Well, let's head to commercial break. When we come back, we can give picks for weeks. So this is the Halftime Show on Sports Geeks.
Hey there, Milwaukee Radio. Sports Geeks. Hey there, geeks. Are you looking to get a new image for your website? Did you know if you're not on the World Wide Web, your business is 78% less likely to be found by your potential customers? That's like throwing money away rather than making it. Give the team that made the Milwaukee Sports Geeks look good, Seller Studio Designs. These guys rock. They believe turning your ideas into reality. They did with the Sports Geeks. They offer affordable web solutions to drive traffic and, most importantly, new customers your way. Give them a call at 920-568-8839 at thesellerstudio.com. Let Dave over there, who I personally work with, know that you need help on your image. Again, the guys at Seller Studios, 920-568-8839. Hey, this is Cody from the Sports Geeks. Does your company run SAP software? Are you looking to have it run smoother and easier? Then you really need to know about Hillend Solutions out in Brookfield. They are the SAP experts when it comes to your SAP education and your SAP cloud computing needs. What's more important than your education and running these systems? That is right, nothing. So get in touch with my guy Greg Burke over there. Call him today at 262-439-8391. Again, ask for Greg. He'll walk you through their SAP solution, or you can reach him on the web at www.hiln-solutions.com. That's Hillen Solutions, 262-439-8391. Join the Milwaukee Sports Geeks, driven by Uptown Motors, this Sunday and every Sunday morning as we discuss the Packers, the Brewers, the Bucks, and all sports Wisconsin on 1250WSSP.com. That's Milwaukee Sports Geeks every morning at 8 o'clock on Sports Radio 1250WSSP. Tune in to check out the special guest along with the host of the show, Chris Carter. Once again, that's Milwaukee Sports Geeks on Sports Radio 1250WSSP, or you can listen to them online at www.1250WSSP.com. Tune in. You'll be glad you did.
All right. We are back. There's only about 12 minutes left, so we're going to kind of go through these picks a little quicker, even though we have three people. Right away, we have bye weeks on the slate for Buffalo, Cincy, New England, Giants, Philly, and San Fran. All actually pretty good teams. I mean, right now your worst team right there is Philadelphia, but every team is a good team, so probably there might be some bad matchups this week. Quickly, last week Eric and I had our toss-up, and it was Cam Newton for total yards. He had 347. I had 361. I don't know what I was thinking. He wasn't even close to that, so Eric won that. So this next week, Steve, you can be in this too. How many touchdowns will Christian Pond have against the Green Bay Packers this Sunday?
One.
He will throw for one, but the Packers will have a pick six, so net zero.
All right, I'm going to go with one as well. And last week, our picks, Eric and I were both 8-5, so that's not too bad. I thought it did a lot worse. But let's go Bears at Bucks. Bears are favored by 1.5. Even though they're in Tampa, this is a London game, right? So technically a neutral field, but I still like the Tampa Bay Bucks. They played great on Sunday against the Saints, so picking the Bucks.
God, I wish there was a bigger spread on this one. It really is a toss up over there. I guess I'll take the Bears.
I'm going to take Chicago. I think their defense is going to pretty well against Tampa Bay's offense.
All right. Washington at Carolina. Washington's now going to start John Beck. Cam Newton's got to have a better game. Spread is only 2.5, but Carolina's going to win this game.
I'm going to go with Carolina as well. Redskins really don't impress me. Rex Grossman showed his true colors last week.
I think it's pretty unlucky for Washington to have actually started out the season pretty well because they're out of the suck for luck sweepstakes. Carolina's going to win.
Now Washington's probably going to finish up like 5-11, get like the 9th-10th pick, and just there's nothing really there. San Diego at New York Jets. The San Diego Chargers are favored by 2. I think this has to be a little bit more, even though the Jets won on Monday night. The Chargers have kind of not played that great, but they're the San Diego Chargers. I got to think the Chargers in this game.
The Jets with 2 points. I think I'll have to go with the Jets there. All these lines are pretty close this week. Nothing too crazy. I mean, you're looking at the biggest ones at 12, minus 12 Rams Cowboys. Oh, no, minus 14 Saints Colts. But, I mean, all these early games are all pretty much very close games that are all pretty much toss-ups, but I'll go Jets.
This is one of my favorite games for this weekend. I think it's going to be a really good one, but I think the Jets are going to win at home.
It's a lot of good games this week. Seattle at Cleveland is your next game. It's technically a good game, even though it's not two good teams. Cleveland right now worried about with Peyton Hillis and his hamstring. Seattle still wondering about what they want to do with quarterbacks because Whitehurst has been getting some snaps now. So what's happened there? That being said, I got to take Seattle for the win and the points.
I'm going to take Cleveland at home, even though they're minus three. I like that Cleveland team a little bit. Hopefully Peyton Hillis is healthy, both for my pick and my fantasy team.
I thought Cleveland would be a little bit better than they were this year, but Seattle doesn't have a quarterback, so Cleveland will win.
All right, Houston at Tennessee. This was the one game I really couldn't decide. Tennessee's here by three. Without Andre Johnson, I don't really like this Houston Texans team. They still don't know. They're really having a two-prong running back attack with Ben Tate and Arian Foster. So I'm really good. I'm just going to take Tennessee here.
Yeah, I like Tennessee at home. They play well when they're in Nashville, so I'm going to go with Tennessee.
I'm going to go with Houston just because Tennessee's favored by three, and I think it's going to be a pretty close game.
Okay, but you still think Tennessee's going to win or Houston is going to win?
I think Tennessee could win, but I'll take Houston with the points.
Okay. Next game, this is going to be a real fun game to watch. It'll probably be blacked out anyways in Miami, so they don't have to watch it. And the only people that will be watching it will be Tim Tebow fans, which is so many people, which is ridiculous. But Broncos, Miami. Miami's served by 1.5. They just looked awful on Monday. They're not a good team. They're one of the leading candidates for suck for luck. Matt Moore, your starting quarterback, really. Your backup, Sage Rosenfeld. Your running back situation is awful. Thomas, Bush, none of them has impressed me. I mean, I feel bad for Brandon Marshall. I mean, he wanted to really get out of Denver, and then he goes to Miami, and they don't even have a quarterback. So maybe next year when he has Andrew Luck, he can show why he's a really good wide receiver. But I got to take Denver to this game. There's no way that Miami can score points.
How is this 1.5? Like, it boggles my mind. Miami looks awful, week in and week out, awful. And then you're going to add on the fact that they're doing a tribute to Tim Tebow at the stadium, and the fact that since Tebow's been named quarterback, they've sold 10,000 more tickets. It's going to be a Broncos crowd, and the Broncos are playing at home in Miami, and you still get a 1.5 for them. I think Tebow's going to go nuts. I think Tebow's going to have a huge week. I'm going to pick the Broncos straight. I mean, you got why do you even give me the 1.5? I think I got them by 10.
Okay, wow, 10.
It won't be blacked out just because there's going to be a lot of University of Florida fans there rooting for Tim Tebow for two reasons. One, because they love Tim Tebow, and they want the Dolphins to not win a game so they can get Andrew Luck. I don't think Denver's going to win by 10, but Denver's going to win.
And Denver's had a full week with Tim Tebow with the bye week, so I think they're going to be at least prepared. I know he won't have Brandon Lloyd, but Eric Decker, Eddie Royal, Demaryius Thomas, he has a decent receiving core to throw to, and then he'll probably just run it, and then he also has some decent running backs. Next, we got Atlanta at Detroit. Detroit's favored by 3. It's a really good game. It's kind of tough to pick. Detroit, Atlanta. I'm not sure. I'm going to pick Detroit again.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Detroit, especially after losing this past week. They're going to be out to get somebody, and Ford Field is, oh, my God, that is, it gets so loud in there. It is just unbelievable. I got to take the Lions.
I just want to know how the Lions get 3 home games in a row. That's pretty weird. But, yeah, I like Detroit to win in Ford Field pretty much because they're home. But also, they actually don't have Ronnie Brown. The trade was voided.
Yeah, I forgot. I was going to mention that. I couldn't believe, because Harrison has health injuries?
Adam Schefter tweeted, Ronnie Brown to Detroit trade voided because running back Jerome Harrison has health issues. So Brown is still an Eagle.
And that really sucks for Detroit because with Best, and if he has some concussion, he technically might be out this week. I mean, Ronnie Brown is definitely a lot better running back than Jerome Harrison. So that's a surprising one to me. Did you say who you picked, though, Steve? I didn't hear you.
I'm picking Detroit.
Okay. Kansas City at Oakland. Oakland's only favored by 4.5. I think this has to do a lot with the Jason Campbell, Carson Palmer, the quarterback situation. Kansas City is not as bad a team as their record shows, but Oakland's a good team. They play well at home. I'm going to take Oakland here.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Oakland as well. This Kansas City team really isn't very good, especially away from Arrowhead. They look a little bit better at home. You get the Oakland Raiders at home. I think they're going to beat up on them a little bit.
If Oakland was a pass first team, I would probably take Kansas City. But since they're run first, Palmer just really has to manage the game because he's obviously not going to know too much of the playbook, so I'll take Oakland.
All right, rest of the games aren't that hard. Pittsburgh at Arizona. Pittsburgh's only favored by 3.5. Taking Pittsburgh easily in that game.
Yeah, I think so, too. I can't even imagine how many interceptions Kevin Cobb is going to throw.
The Niners are going to gain a half game on everyone without playing. So, yeah, Pittsburgh.
St. Louis at Dallas. Dallas is favored by 12, but that's a little too high for me. So I'm going to take Dallas for the win, but St. Louis with the points.
That's a tough one. This St. Louis Rams team looks really, really terrible this year. Their wide receivers drop passes left and right. Their defense is awful. I could see Dez Bryant and Miles Austin just having huge games. So I'm going to go Cowboys.
I'm going to do the same thing you did, Cody. I'll take Dallas for the win, but St. Louis with the points.
All right, this next one's really easy. Packers-Vikings. Packers by 9. Packers.
Packers.
The spread should be 18, and Packers.
Still Packers of 18. Colts at Saints Sunday night. Poor Sunday night, another bad game. Saints favored by 14. I think that's about right. Saints.
I think it might be a little bit too much. I'm going to go with the Colts to cover, not to win, obviously.
Is it just because you love Curtis Painter? Your boy?
He has gorgeous man hair, and I think I might have a crush on him.
He is the this era's Don Magic Man Mikulski, for sure. He has the same number, the same hair. It's fantastic. This would have been actually a really good game, when the schedule came out, because Manning was supposed to play. But I think the Saints will cover. They're at home, so.
All right, and final Monday night, Baltimore at Jacksonville. Don't know how Jacksonville really gets a home game for a Monday night. Ravens favored by 8, and I think they're just going to tear apart Blaine Gabbert. I think this will be a fun game to watch Ed Reed, Ray Lewis, their entire defensive line all just tear apart Jacksonville. Baltimore's going to win.
The 8-point spread scares me a little bit, but Baltimore's gotten some blowouts this year, so I'll take Baltimore even with the 8-point spread.
I'll take Baltimore to win, but Jacksonville with the points, pretty much just because they're at home. And I don't know, I think Blaine Gabbert's a decent quarterback. I think he'll be all right.
Okay. So who would you rather have for the next 5 years quickly, Andy Dalton or Blaine Gabbert? Because they're really the only two quarterbacks that I've been semi-impressed with so far, rookie-wise. Oh, I am Cam Newton, but I'm not calling Cam Newton.
I just don't know if I can trust Andy Dalton's longevity over a career, so I'll go with Blaine Gabbert.
Okay.
I got Andy Dalton.
I'm taking Dalton as well. I like his little red hair. I just think he's actually a decent quarterback. And I know he has no soul, but he can pass. All right, well, we are about to get going. The clock is ticking down to the end of the show. Time to close out. Thank you for listening to the latest episode of The Halftime Show, brought to you by BetUS here on Sports Geeks Radio. For Eric Name and Steve Mani, thanks for listening.